cleanup lecture, the finale. It's a bit about the heritage of the Vietnam War and about what it's called the Pike Ward thesis, that we won the war. The final thought I'd like to leave you with. And then we'll come back to this business of some forms. I'll pass out the final exam to you. Two papers to fill out, this blue faculty evaluation form, and then this one on the TTU student services. All right, this has to do with the heritage of the war, final cluster of perceptions of the Vietnam War. What is its meaning, if any? There's an infinite number of these, the most important of which are discussed in the reader on page 68 and 69. One major perception is that an epidemic of global violence resulted from the Vietnam War due to its How to Do It demonstration by the Viet Cong and the success which these techniques made possible. So unleashed was the notion that shooting, kneecapping, kidnapping, blackmailing, hijacking, anything goes so long as it promises political change. Now this idea of political terror is almost respectable. It bodes ill for democracies, particularly because personal freedom in a democracy is not a consequence of institutions, it's an attitude of mind. It respects the rights and personal security of others. And so you face the grim prospect that the price of defense against this kind of political fanaticism is the loss of some of our own freedom. A second strategic meaning drawn by many is that the Vietnam War proves that aggression pays so long as it is protracted, as long as it's drawn out. Genius of the Vietnamese communist strategy is the example of how to manipulate external perception by drawing events out in time, so that what is done is not seen as aggression, but as necessary social change. Further meaning probably is that a democracy cannot fight a protracted conflict, 50-year war. It can fight a quick war, even a dirty war, but not one that appears endless. The enormous danger in this 50-year war thesis is the fact that, for no other reason, there is no known proven counter-strategy. Time itself is the only strategy you can use against it. Third, I consider this quite important. The Vietnam War destroyed, to a large extent, social consensus in the United States. I think we've talked about this before. Social consensus is a sociologist term meaning having to do with what a society stands for. It means really three things. What is it that this any society this applies to? What is it that this society stands for? What is our essential philosophic belief? How is it different from other societies? How is it the same? Secondly, where do we want the society to go in the long run? This is the social vision. And three, how do we get there? Getting there is really simply another term for politics, of which there's always disputation and should be. But those are the three things that any society, if it's to be viable, must have. It must have a social vision, it must have a direction in which it wants to go, and consensus among the people of the society. This is true even of totalitarian societies, I say, proven in the case of the Soviets. Motives and intentions. Rambo conspiracy thesis is still very much alive. It's also left a core of disenchanted people, many of them in some of the colleges. We had a lot of them in Berkeley. They're spoilers who really badmouth everything that is done in the society everything that is attempted. And much of this grows out of the Vietnam, so-called Vietnam syndrome. Fourth perception is that the Vietnam War had only limited meaning to the world and to the future. It is a one-of-a-kind situation. It will never repeat itself again. The bumper sticker we saw after the war, "No More Vietnams," really irrelevant. These were in respect to the Horn of Africa, El Salvador, insurgency in the Philippines, and so on. That kind of a war, according to this thesis, grows out of a very peculiar heritage of local soil, and it's a product of the past, and it can't be replicated because other societies don't have this past, these operative conditions. The Vietnam War did some things in plus terms. It brought time for Southeast Asia, which the Southeast Asians are constantly telling us about, and up until recently, when their economy started going bad, they credited most of this to the fact that we stood in Vietnam during the formative years of their economic development. It also discredited the notion of revolutionary war among many potential revolutionaries in Africa and Latin America, stripping of it as romanticism. And it was very hard in those places to say you should fight a war like the Viet Cong fought in Vietnam. And you look at the years of turmoil and trouble and the casualties that the Viet Cong undertook. And if you're a potential revolutionary, this is not much of a recommendation. It also resulted, I think, in a more realistic U.S. Southeast Asia relationship. Finally, a bit about the Pike Ward, "We Won the War" thesis. In 1987, Benjamin Ward, who's an economist at University of California, and myself published an article in the Washington Quarterly, summer 87, titled "Losing and Winning, Korea and Vietnam as Success Stories." We argued as a thesis that these two wars were twin U.S. successes. Ben took Korea and I took Vietnam. We collaborated on the conclusion. I argued that the image of the fall of Vietnam, the fall of Saigon, and Ben argued that U.S. forces retreating southward from Seoul, Korea, were not the stop of which victory was made, but that in considering the circumstances under which the U.S. intervened in both wars, fighting was underway already before we got there, and our allies were losing, the main objective was to contain a looming communist threat. That level of involvement Washington chose either to win the war, that is, occupy the enemy countries, or not to intervene at all, and in effect abandon Asia for the communists. The Washington judgment was, correctly I think, this would have been worse. The essence of this argument is that if you look at Northeast Asia after the war, after the Korean War, and you look at Southeast Asia after the Vietnam War, from American national interest standpoint, things are pretty good. And that good condition, basically, is the result of the way the war ended. The wars ended. And if they had won in total victory, there would not have been as good as the way they did end. It would have meant, in both cases, a permanent occupation. This is assuming we'd invaded North Korea, invaded North Vietnam in these two cases, and had fought a prolonged guerrilla war in the whole country. Having done that, other things would not have happened. The way that the war ended in both cases gave Northeast Asia a chance to develop. It made the so-called Japanese economic miracle possible. It made the tremendous economic development of South Korea possible. which would not have happened if we had won the war. And the same thing is true in Southeast Asia. The really good world that was resulting, particularly economic Southeast Asia, would not have been the case if we had quote won the war. The changes in China would not have taken place had the war in Korea been won. The changes in the Soviet Union would not, the so-called Gorbachev window of opportunity, would not have developed had we won the war. Now this is not to say that we saw this coming and we carefully arranged it. We didn't. It's simply a commentary, I think, on the longer uses of history. What seems to be a good outcome or a bad outcome in the longer run turns out to be the opposite. The problem I had with this, when we sent this into the magazine, I got a call from the, what they call the spell checker, the little guy that checks facts, and it's a fact checker, rather. And he said, "Well, Mr. Pike, I can't really say I can't really subscribe to this notion, because you see, I'm a Lao." And here I'm saying, it all turned out for the best. Everything is fine. What are we worrying about? Well, if you're a Lao, or a Vietnamese, Cambodian, that doesn't go down at all well. This is the Olympian view. American national interest was best served by the war turning out the way that it did. That seems to me to be an unarguable answer. But it's not one you put to Lao, or Vietnamese, or Cambodian. But the Lao are very understanding people. Anyway, we're supposed to be turning this into a book. I don't know if we ever will. The further downstream argument on this was that the way the Vietnam War turned out caused the generals in the Kremlin to conclude that the Americans weren't all that tough, they weren't all that successful, that they weren't 10 feet tall. And we didn't really have, we, the generals in the Kremlin, didn't have to worry all that much about them. We still keep our defenses, but we take a sort of relaxed attitude toward it. And then came Afghanistan, in which all the American military and the Pentagon thought this is going to be a cakewalk for the Russians. They're just going to cream the place and be out. They'll do what we should have done in Vietnam, but couldn't. They couldn't do it either. And for a combination of reasons, which are many of them are similar to the Vietnam War, including casualty stories on Moscow television, the kind of opposition in the universities of the Soviet Union, parallels to many to what happened in Vietnam, it convinced the Soviets that they couldn't keep this up anymore. Candle wasn't worth the game, and so they got out. And that effect in the Kremlin, or in Washington, was exactly the same as it had been in the Kremlin. The generals in Washington and the Pentagon were saying, "Well, I thought they'd have no trouble with Afghanistan. They're not all 10 feet tall. They're not all supermen. They can't do anything if they wanted to." So you had that kind of momentary period when each of them sort of downscaled to some extent the threat of the potential enemy. And that was the so-called Gorbachev window of opportunity, in which he argued simply that they had to change their system because they were going bankrupt under this present plan. The Americans were bleeding them to death with the Star Wars notion of enormous input into defense, and this is the only way that we can stop this deterioration of the Soviet Union. It didn't last too long. Gorbachev was thrown out, but it did begin a process that eventually wound up with a disestablishment of the Communist Party, not only in Moscow or the Soviet Union, broke up the Soviet Union, also Eastern Europe. all of which, according to this thesis, would not have happened if the Vietnam War had turned out as an American success, a court success. But it was a success, and that's why it turned out so well. Well, the point of all this, and what I've said earlier, really is, as we've said all year, is the perceptional approach. We have not yet arrived at the gates of truth, capital T, of the Vietnam War. We haven't even arrived at most of the small t truths about it. We're still wandering around in a maze of perceptions. And you should keep this in mind when you're writing your term paper or the final. Any questions or comments about the Pike Ward thesis? All right, well, let me pass off the final exam, which I'm willing to discuss within reason. Sal, would you mind? Okay. I'll leave one for me, I guess. Now, these are due by the close of business December 8th. And that's a very firm deadline. The finals are actually due today, but if you can get them in, if you're still having trouble, get them in by the close of business on the 14th. That's the last possible time I can use them in order to give you a grade. So if I don't get them by then, I got to assume you'll be judged accordingly. What's that?
Were you saying this by the 14th? This by the 8th, and our paper by the 14th?
Yeah, the term papers are due on the day of the final, which is next December 8th. That's Tuesday, isn't it? You can come in here with that and write this here if you want. You don't have to take it home. I don't think anybody wants to do that, but...
So the paper due today by 5, let's say?
You're talking about the term paper? Yeah, it's due today. I don't think many of you have them here, do you? Well, good for you. It, punctuality is the thief of time, as they say. That's a factor, maybe a half a grade factor. I'm not a stickler on that. I am if you get them in after December 14th. I'm not sure I'll even accept them after December 14th. You've got some cheerful story that your dog ate the first copy or something. Okay, those faculty evaluation forms.
They didn't make the card way over there.
You
can take them into the final.
Oh, thanks.
Zach didn't get on the email. Sorry, so do we get our papers back?
Yeah, I'll mail the papers and your final.
Do we need to put stamps on here?
No, just address them.
Because I was...
Yeah. Yeah, just we'll pay for the stamp, don't we?
And what do you want to do with those?
Give those to Kyle. Okay.
All right, this goes here.
All right, those are finals. Did you fill out one of these?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you can drop in for this tomorrow. There'll be some Vietnamese noodles and wine, I think. Wine, I'm not sure if it is.
I forgot to title it. Is that going to be a problem?
No.
Okay. That just occurred to me.
Give me an F. Title it. Like take it. That's not instruction to me.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think, this is kind of one of those, like you said, historical what might have been, but do you think it... that if the U.S. had continued giving economic aid to South Vietnam, it would have made a difference after 1972?
Well, I think the operative question was how North Vietnam would read what we were doing.
Exactly.
It was common in foreign policy, which is 50% bluff. We said to them in no uncertain terms,
that
the B-52s are going to come back. And they're going to come back the way they did at the Christmas bombing.
Yeah.
You thought you were getting the worst, but you weren't. That was a taste of it. That's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And we really didn't have any intention of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But our thesis is, or my thesis is, that there are enough so-called doves or softliners in the Pulitzer to say we can't resume the war.
Okay.
We can get unification another way.
Exactly. Because I mean, like, their major offensive wasn't even scheduled until like 1975 or 76. And
right.
Like, they were just buying their time to see how we would work.
Right. And there was no big hurry. In their,
well, they've been fighting
General
Gott
came back with a roll of blueprints. I've got a way. We can win the war. Don't worry about the B-52. He was right.
Mm-hmm.
So, even I think against the better judgment of General Gott, but one of the tragedies. Well, the presidency was weakened by Watergate. That was the beginning. So, yeah.
I forgot to write a reference in here to Dan Oberdorfer's TED.
Don Oberdorfer.
Don Oberdorfer, I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
I forgot to write it in on here.
Okay.
Add it in.
Yeah.
I don't know the publishing dates and all that.
That's all right. Okay. He's coming here, you know. Also, who did the paper on Westmoreland? He's coming here, you know.
Yes, tell me that.
Would you like to meet him?
Yeah.
Give him a copy of your paper, which is quite favorable.
Give him a copy of my paper?
Yeah.
I guess I could.
Listen, people like that love that sort of thing. You're never too big for it. Yeah. Well, get it to me, as I say.
Yes, post haste.
What did I say?
I'm not sure how confused.
Well, the instructions are quite clear, you know, here.
Yeah.
Due December 8th. But if you can get it to me by next Monday. What did I say? What? 14th, yeah.
Okay.
14th is Monday?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Sure I've got a lot of reading to do. But I read very fast.